Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You are listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For anybody that might be unfamiliar with my voice, you might be a new listener. My name is Peter Mingles. We started Building Fortunes Radio over a decade ago. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons why I got started is I wanted to be able to have a voice to be able to talk about the things that happen in the MLM industry. So we started to do Building Fortunes Radio after a couple of different years with lots of different guest hosts. I did a radio show with a gentleman named Roger Van Vlissingen, who wrote, still probably does, for a website, and probably others as well, called SeekingAlpha.com. And SeekingAlpha.com is a website that is kind of one of those opinionated websites for publicly traded companies. And Roger was writing about MLM, and specifically about Herbalife, and Bill Ackman and Herbalife stock, and all those types of things. And many of us in the MLM world learned about the stock market, or more about the stock market, and shorting stocks because Bill Ackman shorted Herbalife stock by, like, with a $1 billion bet. So $1 billion, real number. Bill Ackman is a billionaire. A hedge fund manager, and he bet against Herbalife that it would go down below a certain price. I don't remember what the price was. It doesn't matter. But he was betting against that. And lots of people were kind of jumping on top of this as well. And some people jumped on the other side. So they longed, L-O-N-G, the Herbalife stock, specifically a guy named Carl Icahn. So Roger Van Vlissingen was writing about this type of stuff. And coincidentally, at that same time, BK Barreco's company called Vima was temporarily shut down by the FTC as a result of being maybe like a pyramid. And with both of those things going on, Roger was really hot and heavy writing negative stuff about MLM companies. So I asked him to be on our radio show. He obliged, brought a friend named E. Robert Smith. And as a result of that first radio show, I got a phone call shortly after that with a gentleman who's on this radio show right now. As a matter of fact, this is his radio show segment, Scott Johnson. Scott called me up and he said, listen, you know, I listened to that radio show and there's something that a lot of people just aren't paying attention to. And I said, what's that, Scott? And he said, the tool scam associated with MLM. So for those newer listeners that might not understand what the tool scam is, I learned a long time ago as I was looking at MLM that some people make money in MLM and some people make money on MLM, and some people do both. So in MLM, like you build an organization, you sell products, you build a team, you get your overrides, your bonuses, all those other types of things, that's in MLM. On MLM, some people might say, well, Peter, you make money on MLM because we have like a tools business with selling leads and website hosting and radio shows and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. So there are some people that actually are in MLM that also make money on MLM as well. So we did that with my Smart Network, our home-based business, and Nutrition for Life as well. Lots of people do that sort of stuff. And Scott, when he said that, he says, you know, there's something a lot of people aren't talking about, this tool scam. I figured that he must be thinking about the same thing that I was thinking about because I had joined and quit Amway 3 separate times. And the reason why I joined Amway is I wanted to learn from one of the largest MLM companies about how to do MLM. I was thinking about transitioning from the direct sales management business that I was in. Electrolux was the name of the company I was with. And Hoover wasn't our competition. Kirby was not our competition. Electrolux Management was their own competition. And there was a point where I just couldn't take it anymore. So I was looking to transfer my way out of there. So I hired myself, if you will, sponsored my way into Amway and quit because I saw their focus was mostly on these systems, if you will, the books, tapes, and functions, as they used to call it. And then I joined again because I figured maybe the second time I would get a better look at it because maybe the first time the people I joined with just didn't know what they were doing. And then I quit because it was more or less the same thing. Then the third time I told the guy, this is the way it is, and he said, no, it's not. I said, this is the way it is. He said, no, it's not. I said, as soon as I find out this is the way it is, I'm quitting. And he says, that's okay. You know, just give me a chance. So I joined, and I quit because that's what I found it was. And they were mostly making money on the books, tapes, and functions and other things. That's the on the MLM portion of the business. But they weren't being straightforward, and they weren't telling people about the profits they were generating. Now, I run a business, and I ran a direct sales company, and I knew what functions were like because we used to run our own functions, and I knew what it was like to make audio cassettes and have to print brochures and all that sort of stuff, and I had no problem with making a profit. Matter of fact, I expected to make a profit if I sold those back. Maybe not a big profit, but I expected my own personality. The style was we were going to make a profit because it made no sense to lose money by, you know, having events and trips and stuff like that. So I wanted to break even at least. But the Amway people weren't doing it that way. They were kind of alluding that you were going to make all this money. But I said, you know, I can't see really how you can make all this money during anybody's reasonable period of time without something happening, and it's probably a hidden profit from the tools. So I asked Scott, do you have a website? And he said, sure do. It's called stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com. And that's when I knew that he was talking about the same thing. So we said, you know, let's run a couple of radio shows where we can talk about this, because a lot of people don't know about these things, even people inside the business. Like Scott, he was with the industry for a decade before he learned about the tools profit that was hidden inside the tools scam of Amway. And I said, you know, a lot of people don't know about this stuff, and, you know, let's do a couple of radio shows. Well, a couple have turned into 7 or 8 years of radio shows where we do this every Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes in the winter, we might make it 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, but we do it at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central Time, and Scott's going to give you his website and a whole bunch of other places where you'll be able to take a look. But since I know we're going to have a whole bunch of new listeners for lots of different reasons, I figured that let me kind of give you guys a little bit of the introduction of how we started with the Scott Johnson Radio Show. So, Scott, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, when you said the word transition, I was thinking, man, I hope he doesn't say transgender.
I know.
You decided transgender, so I appreciate that. You know, the only thing I could think of was like Bernadette Peters, you know, for Peter Mingles.
I could share with you some stories. I could share with you some. There are pictures floating around of Peter Mingles wearing interesting costumes, but it was as a result of me losing a sales contest for fun with my own division. So we had a steak and beans contest, and the winners ate steak and the losers ate beans. And one year I told the guys that if they could beat my office, I would actually dress up in whatever they wanted me to dress up in, and they would be able to, as a contest for the sales rep, everybody that sold a vacuum that month got a chance to decorate me, the division manager. So there are some photos floating around somewhere that some people could pin to, like a transgender, but it had everything to do with losing a steak and beans direct sales contest. And thank God the internet, Scott, was not around at that time, so I don't have to worry about anybody making copies and sharing those photos. But I do have them, by the way, and they will go to my grave. They will go to my grave.
That's great. I still remember when I was real little, you know, because my mom made Halloween costumes every year, and she really did it up. I mean, she was, you know, great at sewing and creative things. And this one year, me and my older brother were dressed up as Raggedy Ann and Andy, and he got to be Andy. So you know who was Raggedy Ann.
Oh, wow.
And I was not happy at all. And we entered some kind of a little town contest, and we won. I was on display, right? Yeah, I was not happy. I was not a happy camper. So I guess there's probably pictures somewhere of me. I don't know where, you know, I don't think I have any pictures of that. My parents are both deceased, so I guess it went to their graves with them. Or maybe they're squirreled away somewhere. Who knows? But, that damaged me for life. There you go.
It was a cheap contest for me. I think my bonus that month was something like $40,000. and I had to if it away to some of the guys. So we all had a lot of fun, and they certainly enjoyed having some fun with me in a steak and beans contest. So we used to have a lot of fun. That's some of the differences between direct sales and MLM. In direct sales, sometimes people go kind of crazy to do those types of things. Sometimes they might do that stuff in MLM, but in a direct sales company, many times you have a much tighter type of organization where they do those types of things, and it's a lot of fun. So we used to always have a lot of fun. One of my favorite things, I'll never forget this. I was in Joliet, Illinois. For those people who aren't familiar with Joliet, it's a nice Midwestern town. There's a big prison in Joliet, but in Joliet, there was an old section, and in the Midwest, they had these really old houses, like 100-plus-year-old houses, and we actually did a murder mystery in one of these old haunted houses where we actually had like my whole group of people, and it was for a kickoff meeting for an October or an April, and the murder mystery was I was the guy that they murdered, and we walked through this haunted house, and it was just so much fun. So there's a lot of cool things that happen, and unfortunately, those people that are either anti-direct sales or anti-MLM, they don't realize that there's a lot of camaraderie, cult-like behavior that happens many times. That's the glue that keeps things together, and people probably still remember all of those kinds of we call them kickoff meetings that we used to do. We used to do them on the riverboat casinos. Sometimes we would have them at hotels, and sometimes we'd have those murder mysteries, or we'd do those steak and beans contests. We'd always have a lot of fun. So it was a lifestyle, if you will. We used to say it wasn't a career. It was really a lifestyle. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we did social things, with our Amway upline as well. We just didn't realize they were lying through their teeth about everything. So,
right.
during that period, you were really happy. You know, you weren't making money. You were losing money. But, you know, they buddied up to you and made you feel good and encouraged you and told you, you know, you're right around the corner from massive success and all these kinds of things. But they were just lying through their teeth, you know, and not necessarily lies of commission where they said things that were false. It was lies of omission where they just didn't tell you the whole story, you know, and that's what we talk about near the beginning of every show here. And by the way, my wife just mentioned to me that Blues Brothers apparently was based in Joliet, Illinois. So,
oh, no way.
There's another connection you can make. The Blues Brothers, and that steak and beans, I've never heard of that. That's a great idea, though. That's really a good way to motivate people.
Yep. We used to
I'm sure your wife wasn't too happy a few hours later,
no,
right?
No. It was all in fun. See, this is the stuff that the anti-MLM crowd just doesn't understand, because they'll see a film of that, and they'll think that everybody's kind of kooky or crazy or weird or whatever. But, like, unfortunately, the deceased guy from Market America was pretty well known for his little skits and antics, and people used to think that he was awkwardly goofy, and the anti-MLMers just thought he was weird. But Steak and Beans Contest was the winners were served by the losers a steak dinner, and the losers had to eat beans, and we used to do it where they'd have to eat beans with no utensils. So we put, like, you know, a plate of beans, newspaper. It was really demoralizing. So, I mean, this is the things that we used to do to make sure that we had enough sales. So those are the types of things. And then we just had to ante it up. We would do auctions for stuff and have a lot of fun. And it was always very competitive. Matter of fact, I'll get off my stories in just a second. What I used to do as a division manager is we'd have a trophy for the branch that had the most sales. And it's amazing what people do for recognition. And this, I guess, is something that MLM companies do as well. But after 3 months, if you won the trophy for the top sales 3 months in a row, I would retire it in your store. So for instance, in my office, like in Joliet, if I was running the office as well as the division, after 3 months, the sales trophy would stay there. And then, you know, everything gets old after time, so you always have to kind of up it a little bit. And 1 month, I said, I'm going to buy a trophy as tall as the branch manager is. So when we retire it, I'll buy the trophy as tall as you are. And I did that because one of our branch managers was kind of short, and he was kind of easy to poke fun at. But I wanted to win it, so I won one. I won it myself. I was a branch manager as well as division manager. So I won it, and I had to buy myself. My wife thought it was kind of crazy, you know, because she's not part of the whole cult-like clique that we were in. And anyway, so I bought a trophy as tall as I am. And wouldn't you know, when we were moving from Illinois down to Florida, the movers, you know how the movers kind of box everything up and then they kind of put stuff back where they think it should be? Well, they put that trophy like right in front of my picture window. They say, this is the coolest trophy. And my wife says, we are not having a trophy as tall as he is in front of my picture window. So I still have that trophy. Unfortunately, it's boxed up in my attic somewhere. But we used to do cool and crazy things like that. Now, as a result of that, I will share with you, I think my statute of limitations of doing things that are slightly against company policy has expired. So we used to do whatever it took. If we knew that we were right on the edge, you know, somebody might, you know, a couple of people might buy an extra machine, you know, because we wanted to make sure that we were close. And I'll never forget, you know, Bassam was my Chicago South branch manager. There were lots of times where, like, he was reporting numbers and not telling me what he really had. And then I would say on Monday, I'm like, you fucker, you told me you had X amount of sales, and you lowballed me, you bastard. You're trying to beat me. So we would always play in games like that, you know, and like, you had 15 sales more than what you reported, you dumb bastard. And most of the time, people would overreport, not underreport. But we would do all kinds of fun and crazy stuff like that, and it was always a lot of fun. And there was no way in the world, if like we had an auditor come down, an auditor would be able to say, oh, well, you know, geez, you know, what happened over here? You guys, you know, all of a sudden, mysteriously, you had 5 extra sales. I'm like, well, I wasn't going to let that bastard beat me on the sales contest. We're going to go out there and do it. So we went out there and made it happen. So we took, like, Monday afternoon sales and made them, you know, we would tell the customer, we have to backdate this till yesterday, you know? So anyway, so we would do a whole bunch of fun stuff like that. But that's some of the fun stuff that happens in sales management. And I got to tell you, even though we're on a little bit of a tangent, those things do happen at the end of every month, I'm sure, in MLM. Like, there is a rally cry for people to hit their bonuses, hit their contests, hit their pin levels. So there's a lot of fudge factor at the tail end of a very active, vibrant, healthy, if you will, organization that a lot of people just wouldn't understand. Most of the anti-MLMers have no fucking clue because they have never been associated with anything like that. So they wouldn't know, and they would think that that's, oh, gosh, this is so immoral and unethical and whatever. No, these are signs of healthy, vibrant, positive, you know, organizations where there's, as long as there's no loser in the equation, this is the stuff that makes direct sales and MLM companies go round and round. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, as long as it's not excessive. Month that we were in Amway, you know, there would be some people at the very bottom that may have had, I don't know, 70, 60, 80 PV, and the first level that you get paid for is 100 PV. And so it was a practice to call them and say, hey, you only need 20 or 10 more PV, and then you can get your 3% bonus. So, you know, is there anything that you want before the end of the month so that you can get that bonus? And of course, what happened then was it trickled up into the organization to where, you know, maybe somebody like me was not real close to the next level until those people below me bought a little bit more. Then all of a sudden I was pretty close to the next level. So it just made sense for me to buy a little bit more to get to the next percentage level. And as long as it's not extreme, I don't think there's any harm in that. You know, that's just good salesmanship and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think the anti-MLMers are just so despondent. You know, of course, they're a great fearless leader, Robert Fitzpatrick. He reminds me of, I don't know if you remember the old Winnie the Pooh cartoon. Does that ring any bells?
So of course, there was grandkids. Kids and grandkids.
There was this donkey called Eeyore. And he is always like despondent and depressed and negative and just sort of, you know, throws water on the party. And, you know, and that's who Robert Fitzpatrick reminds me of. And of course, his personality has now permeated the anti-MLM Hun movement to one where now everybody's just a sourpuss, right? They're all upset. They're all, everything possible about MLM is terrible. Nothing can be good. And it just really weakens their argument, because there are some things that are good in MLM. You know, I learned a lot of good habits, you know, time management, priorities, those kinds of things. You know, and just basically interacting with people. That was my one objection when my sponsor's sponsor, who was a platinum at the time, came over to do the follow through. I said, you know, Jim, I'm really not an outgoing people person, and I don't know if I can really do this business, because that's what it looks like it takes. And of course, he was pretty outgoing, and so was my sponsor. And he says, well, Scott, we have a program for that. So, and they do, you know, they do teach you things that are useful in life, and it helped me get ahead in my job. And so, you know, I'm not here to say everything possible in MLM is terrible. I'm just saying there are some pretty bad things, particularly in Amway. And we like to talk about these two things that I think are the two major problems. Not that these are the only two things, but certainly to me, they're the two big things. And you mentioned it earlier, the tool scam. And people can learn a lot about this by going to my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson. So it's ScottTexJohnson. And that's all one word. I've got three websites there. I've got the link to this radio show, my YouTube, and my email's there. And so there's just a lot of information that's available. And it's some of the information that we talk about on the show, if people want to actually see the things that we're claiming and see the actual documentation for the things that we're saying, they can go find it themselves on my website. So it's one of those things that, you know, we talk about things here that just seem almost unbelievable. And if you don't believe it, go to my Facebook page, look up my websites, you know, go find the keywords I'm going to mention here in a second, and you'll find it. So the tool scam, you mentioned it earlier. That's where, you know, in our time, it was books, tapes, and functions. That was the buzzwords for the tools. And so the books, of course, are the books that the upline sells at full cover price. They probably buy them for one-third or one-fourth of the cover price, because they're doing it in volume. You could call any bookstore and say, hey, how much does a certain book cost, and then ask them how much does a case of those, and then ask them how much does 10 or 100 cases cost, and you'll see that the price keeps coming down on a per book basis. But the upline charge full cover price, so they make a lot of money on books. The tapes, you know, again, our day was cassette tapes. Now it's basically MP3 and MP4 downloads to your phone, and there's phone apps, there's recordings, there's website access, there's voicemail, there's all kinds of ways to make money. And then the functions, there's small, medium, and large meetings, and particularly the large ones, they make a lot of money. In fact, I was just talking to someone this past week who used to be a diamond in the business, and she told me, oh, yeah, we would generally go to these big convention centers, and we didn't pay anything for the facility. They basically offered that for no cost, and then we also made money on the hotels, and we made money on the concessions. And, of course, it was a win-win for both the upline and the hotels and the concession stands because they had business. But for the IBOs, who didn't know all of this was going on, and they were paying, you know, typically $120, $130 per person for a ticket for a weekend, you know, that was just pure profit. It was 100% profit and then some. And we were never told that. There was nothing that was ever mentioned about that kind of thing. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about the tool scam, is there's just this tremendous profit, and it's because the upline lies by omission. It's not like a steak and beans thing. It's real money. It's real big. And most people don't make a net profit in Amway until they are about the platinum level, which is approximately 100 people in your downline, in your group. And that's actually been documented by the Wisconsin Attorney General years ago. before some of these even more expensive tools were even available. And his study showed that, and he was able to get tax records, I think, through another agency, you know, indirectly. And so what he found was that the average, they call them directs back then, they're now called platinums, where you have about 100 plus or minus people in your downline, they lost about $900 a year. So they were almost breaking even because they were making $2,000 or $3,000 a year, probably gross, being a platinum or a direct. But because of the overhead costs, and a lot of that's travel, a lot of it's meetings, a lot of it's the books, the tapes, all of those kinds of things. And so most people in their group were actually operating in a net loss, probably. Now, maybe some of them were making a little bit of profit because maybe they didn't have as much travel involved as the upline, but nobody was making a lot of money, that's for sure. And I'm pretty sure at least most of those people were losing money, but nobody ever talked about that. That was one of those forbidden conversations, right? You just weren't allowed to talk about it. So that's the tool scam in a nutshell. And what has happened over the years is after people get kicked out, they start talking a little bit, and usually they're not trying to, you know, criticize the tool scam or even brag about it. They're just saying, hey, I joined another MLM, and they pay out much better than Amway, and these are my words, I don't have to scam my downline with tools anymore. And then they say about how much they were making, because that's the important thing to me. It's not whether you're making money from tools, it's how much. And probably the prime example of this is a guy by the name of Brig Hart. He was kicked out, I think, in the early 2000s, and he didn't even own his own tool scam company. He was part of another organization. I want to say it was Jaeger, could have been Brit, I'm not sure. But anyway, he got kicked out, and he said, oh, yeah, I was making – this is an interview he gave to a Salt Lake City newspaper. You know, Utah, Salt Lake City, the home of MLMs, right? The headquarters, so to speak. But he gave this interview, and he said, oh, yeah, in the Amway I was making, you know, almost $1 million a year. But I was making $8 to $10 million a year from the tools. So that's what we're talking about. And there's other people being quoted of, you know, my Emeralds and above made 4 to 5 times more from the tools than they did from Amway. And my personal diamond said that he made at least twice as much from tools versus Amway. And that's when you said, when I found out about the tool scam, that was from my upline diamond. So that was a, you know, very reliable source. He had been kicked out, so he had no reason to hide anything anymore. In fact, he was pretty upset that he got kicked out. And that's a big, long story, by the way. His name is Bruce Anderson. So if you Google Bruce Anderson Amway or Bruce Anderson Quickstar, because that's what it was back in those years, Quixtar, you can find some stories about it. Who knows what really happened, because you never hear all sides of things. But that's how I found out that the tool scam existed. And so that's why I've been on this show for all these years and doing other things even before these years and doing other things right now besides the show to try to draw more attention to this, particularly from the FTC point of view, because I see them as, you know, the real ultimate answer to this problem. All these anti-MLM huns, not only are they off base, but they're just talking into the ether, you know, on YouTube, for example. And that's not how the FTC works. I even called them a number of years ago, and I told them, you know, I've got this website that you mentioned earlier, Peter, and it's a great website. It's got all this, you know, sourced information. It's not just me blabbering my mouth. And they said, well, that's not how we operate. We have to get a certain number of complaints. And, of course, they wouldn't tell me how many before we started an investigation. I said, fine. And so ever since then, I said, hey, anyone I bump into, you have to submit a complaint to the FTC in order to get this thing fixed. And you need to complain about the right stuff, right? You can't complain about, oh, my upline wasn't nice to me, because that's not going to go anywhere. That's just not going to, you know, oh, they pressured me. Well, sorry, that's not breaking a law. they made me eat steak and beans. Oh, sorry, that's just having some fun. So it's just, you know, you have to complain about those two things. And I haven't mentioned the second one yet on this show, but the first one is a tool scam, if you have one. Some MLMs do not have one. The other big thing is lack of retail sales. And I believe that the insurance MLMs do have retail sales. I can't confirm that because, you know, unless I look at the books, I'm not going to be convinced. But I've heard from two or three different people that have been on social media being, quote unquote, interviewed by an anti-MLM hun that has no idea what he's doing, that it looks like they do have a lot of retail sales. And by retail sales, I'm saying sales to customers, people who are not part of the MLM compensation plan, just like you did with Electrolux. Most of your vacuums went to customers. They did not go to your other distributors. And so that's the second problem with MLMs is the lack of retail sales, mostly because the products are overpriced. But also, if you look at, for example, Amway with the tool scam, everyone's got limited time. And so just throwing away morality and ethics and legalities just from a purely dollars and cents business point of view, does it make sense for my downline, for example, to go out and sell a product that I'm going to make maybe pennies from? Or does it make sense for them to go recruit another distributor? They call them IBOs now in Amway, independent business owners. Does it make sense to get somebody else in the business to buy tools, and then I'll make dollars? I won't make pennies. I'll make dollars because they're going to buy the tools. It's very, very profitable, like I just mentioned. And so the obvious answer is, yeah, you're going to tell them to go recruit, go find another IBO. Don't waste your time on retail sales. In fact, we had a guest on here, I think it was last week, Megan. She was celebrated in her group 1 month because even though she averaged 20 PV, which is about $60 of value if it's an Amway product in today's dollars, and the minimum is 50. You're supposed to have 50 PV a month, $150 of sales to non-distributors, customers, in order to receive your downline volume bonus. Well, Amway doesn't enforce that rule. And 1 month, I don't know, we didn't talk about detail how she was able to do this, but 1 month, she had 80 PV, not 50, the minimum, but 80. Even though she averaged 20, for this 1 month, she had 80 PV. And she was celebrated like she was a rock star, right, for being just barely above the minimum. So you can see how much emphasis is being put on retail sales when she is celebrated, and it didn't happen very often, you know, whether it was her or anybody else in this organization, this Larry Winter's organization, LTD. And so you just know, and I know also that there's not many retail sales. Well, that's the definition of an illegal pyramid. You know, people throw around the P word all the time, pyramid, 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 but they have no idea what it means. If you ask them, they couldn't tell you, or whatever they tell you is just garbage. And here's the definition, at least my definition, and it's based on the settlements that the FTC did with both Bima and Herbalife in 2016. You have to have at least as much products being sold to your personal customers as your personal household consumes in an average month, right? I mean, it's not going to be exact every month, but on average, if you can sell as much as you consume in your household, and everybody does that, and of course, not everybody is. So the people that do have to sell a little bit more because you need to get to that 50% point company-wide as a minimum. You can always go above 50%. And so that, to me, is a good definition of an illegal pyramid, that you have free market demand for the product. That's what you're trying to demonstrate to the FTC, is that you have free market demand for the products. And you can demonstrate that by just the retail sales that are comparable to your own personal consumption, not your downline. They've got their own personal consumption and sales requirement. And that rule has to be enforced. I mean, it's not being enforced, but it needs to be enforced. You know, if you don't meet it, then you don't get paid, which means people are going to quit pretty quickly. And that's why they still ignore the rule, is because they realize, gee, if we don't pay this out, even though we're not supposed to, they're going to quit. And we want them to buy more, both products from an Amway perspective and tools from an Upline perspective. And so that rule is routinely ignored. I mean, it's just not even, it may as well not be a rule. In fact, it's worse to have a rule and not enforce it than to not have one to begin with, in my opinion. But that's the other big problem, is lack of retail sales. And that's what makes an MLM an illegal pyramid. If you have the retail sales, like I think these insurance companies do, then it's a legitimate MLM. There's nothing wrong from the standpoint of an illegal pyramid. There could be other issues, but from an illegal pyramid standpoint, it just does not apply to that situation. So anyway, I'll stop there, let you make any comments. And then I think you wanted to talk about the FTC chair commissioner a little bit, because you listened to her, I think, 4 or 5 hour, we'll call it interrogation, I guess,
yep.
Depending on who it was, right? If it was Republican, it was an interrogation. If it was a Democrat, if it was their turn to ask questions or make comments, they just loved her. They just said, you're the greatest person that's ever sat in that chair behind the FTC name tag sign. So I'll let you talk about that, Peter, because I haven't listened to it yet. I'm going to, just having that time. I'm sure it's very interesting, and I'll let you go ahead and take it away with whatever you want to talk about regarding that.
So for those people that are unfamiliar with the FTC, that's the Federal Trade Commission, they are basically a government-appointed group. They're unelected, which means you've never voted for anybody on the FTC, and they're nominated, if you will, and have to be approved by whoever is part of the Congress at that time, and they're appointed by the president. So there's 5 commissioners for the Federal Trade Commission, and sometimes all the positions are filled, sometimes they're not. And the commissioner today is a woman. Her name is Lina Khan. Lina is L-I-N-A, Khan is K-A-H-N, and she was basically grilled by the Congress about some of the FTC's actions just recently. So if you do a YouTube video search for FTC Lina Khan Senate hearings, you'll be able to see that multiple hours of that Senate hearing. So some of the challenges with Lina Khan are that a lot of people are resigning. They don't like her leadership style. They think that she does things that are illegal. They think that she does things that are unethical. And they think that she's a bully. So I don't know anything about her, so I started to watch this Senate hearing, because that's always a great thing. And you can see that she is definitely a politician, if you will. She's smart, so I can't take that away from her. She's a lawyer, and I think you have to be part of the FTC as far as the commission is concerned. So she's educated, she's smart, and she was grilled on both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats. Now, the FTC has done good work in many instances, and then they've done not so much good work in many instances. And Lina Khan seems to be an academic. And for all those people, including Robert Fitzpatrick, who has said in his book Ponzinomics, part of the problem with the FTC and part of the problem with a lot of the lawmakers is, and the people that are anti-MLM, is they're academics, which which is interesting. So academics means they're book smart. Book smart usually means street stupid. So she's an academic. And I figured, okay, well, let me kind of check out how she reacts to these things. So the reason why there was a Senate hearing had nothing to do with MLM, or basically nothing to do with MLM. It had everything to do with what the FTC has been working on. And specifically, one of the reasons why they were having the hearing is because she's spending money like she's a drunken sailor. So she's got no sense of a budget, or she's got a sense of entitlement. So she's kind of overblown on her budget, and I'll get to that in a second. The other part was that she's picking on Twitter and Elon Musk. So that's the real reason why there was a Senate hearing, because if you're unfamiliar with the United States, there's an election coming up, and if you're unfamiliar with the United States, they have to make sure that they corrupt the election again by making sure that Joe Biden or whoever's going to be that Democrat is going to be able to stay in power. So social media companies have been corrupted. And by the way, for all those people that might be listening in, says, well, Mingles is talking like a conspiracy nut, a QAnon, whatever. I mean, get your fucking head out of your ass. Excuse my language. It's so friggin' obvious that one of the things that they have done, meaning our government, the Biden administration, more so than ever before, is they have corrupted a lot of the political organizations. And this has been all over the place, even so just recently where the Supreme Court or Justice, I think it was over in Oklahoma, basically said, government, you have to stop the meetings you're having with these social media companies, shutting down all these accounts that say things that you just don't want to hear. So there's something that we call the First Amendment and freedom of speech and all those types of things that comes with real debates, not some of the debates that you sometimes see by the anti-MLMers in this industry, but real debates. And Lina Khan basically has been picking on Twitter. They did something like, and I know I'm going to get this wrong, something like 350 letters to the company and something like, you know, dozens of subpoenas to Twitter. So they're picking on Twitter using all these bogus bullshit things, and even to the point where they had an independent company auditor that was supposed to look at Twitter and the FTC. Oh, basically, it was from Ernst, I forget the whole name of the company, but it's Ernst and whatever. This independent auditor basically
Ernst and Young,
quit.
I believe, Peter.
Ernst and Young. So he basically quit because the FTC told them what results they wanted from this independent study. And he says, I can't do that. I'm an independent. We're supposed to be independent. I can't give you the results that you're looking for. And I got to file a complaint about the FTC because this is what you're asking. And what I'm really afraid of is now you're going to come after us as well because I won't give you what you're looking for. So the FTC is corrupt, just like all the other unelected organizations are. SEC, come on, man. Jesus. You take a look at what the SEC has done, FTC, FDA, you know, the CDC, all those types of issues. They're all corrupted. So, you know, talk to anybody that does anything as far as studying. You realize that we've been politicized and basically bought and sold. Now, by the way, Robert Fitzpatrick will say that the FTC has been bought and sold by the MLM industry, and that's probably true. And then we'll say that the FTC has been bought and sold by someone else, and that's probably true as well. There's a lot of money going back and forth, but in part of this hearing that they did with the FTC, the Republicans were really beating her up about, why are you going after Twitter like this? Why are you going after Twitter with all these subpoenas? Why are you doing this? Is it just because Elon Musk is trying to have free speech and might actually sway an election? So they really went after her for that. Now, when the Democrats, because they kind of alternate, you know, the Republicans on this side, Democrats, Republicans, and then Democrat. The Republicans were like, well, Lena, you know, like you're like a first grade teacher. Like, Lena, you know, these bad people are sitting there. We're so proud of you for sitting here and taking all this abuse that these Republicans are giving them. So, like, here's your milk and here's your cookie and here's your nipples. So you'll be able to suck the nipples on this bottle over here. So the Republicans are beating the hell out of her. The Democratic people are like, oh, you're such a wonderful person. And these people are really very mean and all these horrible things that they say about you. Well, one of the Republicans really nailed her. Like, really nailed her. Well, I'll get to that in a second. I'll kind of soften it up. One of them asked her, like, he said something about, he fished out of her one way or another about that she just had a kid. So she got a baby, like, 6 months old. And I forget what the reference was, but I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. This gal's been in office for a little bit less than 2 years or so. She has a baby that's 6 months old. What the hell? Like, don't these friggin' federal workers actually ever get a job between Pete Buttigieg? Don't they go to work? Or what do? They get elected and then they have friggin' babies, so they take some time off? What the hell's going on? So anyway, so she's a mom, so Nope. Part of that's bad, except that, you know, anybody that I want running an organization, I really want them kind of full-time. Can you be full-time while you're doing, like, running an organization? I've never been able to figure out how to do anything, you know, a couple hours a week with diverted or distracted interest. So, I mean, come on, man. So anyway, so that part of it. The other part was, one of the other ones says, did you ever run a business? The answer is no. She's a friggin' academic, never run a business. How in the world could you really understand what businesses do if you've never run or owned a business? Now, we do realize that there's many YouTubers that'll probably pick on that comment. Well, you don't have to be somebody who's in that industry to really know that industry. I'm like, oh, my God, how fucking stupid can you be? Excuse my language. But the reality is, of course, you need to have, you know, you need to be able to run an organization and a business to be able to understand some of the ins and outs and the culture and everything else like that. But nope, Lena, haven't done that as well. She's had more people resign, more lawyers resign under the last 2 years because of all of her predatory practices than anybody else ever before. And then they fished out one of this, and this is a good one. They fished out that, wait a minute, you, on all the things that you're working on, are supposed to be a lawyer in good standing, and you haven't paid your dues. like, as a lawyer, you're behind on your dues, and you're also supposed to be continuing your education, so you're behind on your continuing education as well. All of which, of course, she had nothing to be able to defend herself because those things are facts. So here we have an academic who's a power-hungry person who probably thinks she's doing the best thing she possibly can, but probably not. But the reality is she's power-hungry, and we've seen what she's done to some of the MLM companies, and we see what she's doing with Twitter to be able to kind of push and maneuver an election, however they're going to be able to push and maneuver election. And it's just a matter of time before they're probably going to be able to try to figure out how to shut down Elon Musk or anybody else that might have some free speech out there. But it was a very, very, very interesting 4 hours. So for those people that want to watch it, they certainly can. And all those YouTuber, anti-MLM or Instagram, you know, whatever, misogynistic, homophobic, whatever, is probably going to say some things about some of my comments. And we understand that. But in the real world, we need somebody that really understands how businesses run to run the FTC. Now, in her defense, I'm sure she's doing some things that are okay. But she did reference that they got their ass kicked by the Supreme Court with this 13D thing, and they're kind of trying to figure out how to be able to work their way around that. And now that they're getting their ass kicked by not being able to sit down with social media companies like weekly meetings and coordinate with them whose accounts they're going to shut down, they're having their wings clipped in other areas as well. And here was probably the best part. And I don't know if it was puffery or bluffery or whether it was real or not, but she was sending people to Europe, like a lot of people to Europe, to help them with their regulations. And the guy who was grilling her said, you know, you don't even know how much money you've been spending. We've been watching this. You're out of control, lady, as far as your budget. We're going to cut your budget this year by 25%. Now, you could see her face. It was classic. You could see her face like, holy poop. And if she was like one of those senior officers, she probably would have left a little stain in her pants as a result of what you saw. So it was kind of funny to watch that Republican say, and you don't realize this, lady, but as soon as you're out of here, you know, as soon as we get this legislation done, because we're in power now, we're going to cut your budget by 25%. So who knows if that was, like I said, bluffery or puffery or whether it's real or kind of like a fake thing. But the reality was is the Republicans are pushing back against Lena Khan as well as some of the other people in the FTC. So for all those people that are these YouTubers that think the FTC is got the upper hand on MLM or anything else, I'm not so sure. There's been some real pushback from the Republicans. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, that's great synopsis of that meeting. That's really good information. I'm looking forward to listening to it. So the issue of 13B did not come up during that hearing, right?
It did. No, she brought it up. She says, you know, we had a...
Oh, she did bring it up.
Oh, she did, yeah. She basically said, you know, we had a huge loss recently by the Supreme Court which prevented us from doing a lot of the things that we wanted to do to be able to protect customers. You know, all this stuff is about protecting customers. That's what they said. They're using this to be able to protect customers.
Did she ask for new legislation to replace that, or did she just complain, basically?
I think she alluded that there's some new legislation in the works. So they're working on that, and I think it was about that appropriate time where the guy kind of said, well, that's going to be interesting with your wings clipped, you know, with the 25% reduction. So, of course, for those people listening, you should listen in for yourself, even if you listen to it, you know, 1.5 speed, because you could probably listen to it at a faster speed. But it was kind of interesting to see how this unelected official is basically just as crooked as everybody else is. So whether she's incompetent or crooked, either way, the reality of what they're doing with this independent auditor, Ernst & Young, and Twitter is really revealing of how corrupt many of the federal agencies are, these unelected federal agencies. When they want to get you, they're going to get you.
Yeah, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised because, you know, politics is politics, is when that person said, we're going to clip your wings by 25%, what they really meant was, you just overspent by 25%, and we're going to put you back to 100%. So they're not really cutting it. They're just not allowing her to, you know, increase the spending like she was doing. That's probably what that really means. So, and that's pretty amazing that they're sending a bunch of people over to Europe when they should be regulating over here more and let the enforcement in the United States be the example to the other countries versus spending a lot of money over in Europe. I'm sure they're having a great time, though, seeing all the sights, having all the nice meals and all that kind of thing. You know, I'm sure they didn't just work the whole time. That's pretty amazing. And she is very young to be particularly the chairperson of the FTC, you know, maybe not so much the commissioner, although most commissioners are older than her. They have more experience. But to your point, most of them do not have any real-world business experience. Most of them are also lawyers. You know, they've never owned a business. They don't know how to run a business, and they know how to analyze things, either correctly or incorrectly. But, you know, just being young, she's in childbearing years. That's one reason you don't want to have somebody to be the chairperson of the FTC is, you know, if they're a female, they're going to have a child, and they're not going to be able to put their full energy there. I'm being misogynistic too, into the job, because it's a big job. It's an important job, and it takes focus, a lot of focus. And it's unfortunate that now she's got this divided priorities. She really ought to be in the FTC, not in charge of the FTC, in my opinion, or not even in the FTC at all. But yeah, she's very liberal. She was very controversial when she was nominated. And of course, she made it through the process, mainly, I think, because the Senate is Democrat. And so it's, you know, one of those political things. However, both Republican commissioners over the past year or so have quit in protest, basically saying that she's doing all the wrong things, the wrong way. She's not going through certain processes. She's going from, you know, point A to point Z just very quickly without any kind of discussion or investigation. You know, she's just doing things that she wants to do, and probably not following the law, because, you know, the FTC is part of the executive branch, and the executive branch is supposed to enforce the law. And certainly laws can be interpreted different ways, and you can have priorities. You know, that's always a factor. But when you get out of control, and I believe she is out of control, then you need your wings clipped. You need to be toned down and told, hey, you have a job to do. Don't go creating your own laws. You know, don't take the interpretation so extreme that you think you can do anything you want, because you can't. And I think that's what's happening with her in charge and the other two Democrat commissioners. That's the nature of the FTC, is when a new president comes in, that party, whatever that president's party is, gets to nominate both the chairperson, and if there aren't already two commissioners in the same party, then they get to nominate two commissioners, up to three total, and then the other two have to be the opposite party. That's the general way that the FTC has been structured for forever, as far as I know. And it's unusual for both other commissioners to quit in protest. You know, some of them quit because, you know, maybe there was a big opportunity that came up. They could work for some prestigious law firm and make the big bucks, or maybe they retired, or maybe their health or whatever. But both of these Republican commissioners just quit. They said, this stinks. She's not going through any of the normal protocols and the normal processes. She's just doing what she wants to do. And the two Democrat commissioners are going along with her, apparently. There was a series of votes over the past couple years, ever since Biden came in power and she came into office, where it was the three Democrats voting yes and the two Republicans voting no. And they knew they were in the minority, and they protested a long, long way until both of them eventually quit. And unfortunately, one of them that quit was the only commissioner that I'm aware of that has said anything about MLM at all during Biden's presidency, and he's now quit. So, you know, there's been no other statements that I'm aware of coming out about MLM from the FTC. Now, there are, you know, lawsuits like the Niora lawsuit, which is another crazy story to me, because this lawsuit wrapped up, I think it was last October, maybe early November, or November was when they expected the judge to make her decision, and she still hasn't all this time. You know, if this had been a jury trial, you would expect within hours or days, at the very most, a week, for the jury to make a decision, whether they could agree on it or, you know, they had to, you know, say, well, we got some that are one way and some are another, so, you know, we got to start over. But it's this judge. It was what they call a bench trial, which means there was no jury. It was just the judge that has to make the decision on whether Niora, you know, broke some laws, or, you know, if the FTC overreached. And we don't know the answer, and it's crazy that she's held on to this for so long. One of the controversies is there was a series of documents that Niora did not want to be made public. They wanted them, you know, to be kept under wraps, so to speak, and because they said they were business competitive sensitive type documents, and I don't think the judge has even decided on that issue. But certainly, to me, the judge could have decided, you know, the decision by now, and just held on to those documents until she made a decision. So it's kind of a crazy deal.
I have some opinions on that, but when you're done making your comments on that, I'm going to kind of add to what you're referencing. So
yeah, go ahead.
So there were two big things happening in the MLM world just before the Supreme Court, you know, whipped the decision against the FTC that they can't do their decades-long predatory practices anymore as far as freezing assets unjustly. So Success by Health was one company, and the other one is Niora. So Success by Health, I'm going to say it like this. A long time ago, I asked some of the MLM attorneys, why does the FTC go after some of the companies that they go after? And it was like, you know, the FTC goes after the easy wins. You know, they're building their own resume. They're looking for an easy win. They go after unsophisticated owners, all the money in one place, and one they know they're going to win. So unsophisticated, ones they can bully, and the ones they know they're going to win. So if you looked at Success by Health, that was a perfect target, because Success by Health previously had the owner, Jay Nolan, previously was a distributor for a company called Big Smart and had tangled with the FTC a long time ago. So, you know, when they talk about the FTC, you have to have some complaints. We already know what triggered the FTC going after Success by Health. There was a distributor. His name is Luke Curry. He was a disgruntled distributor. He coordinated with 27 plus or minus a few distributors to go after Jay Nolan to file complaints because he knew how to get Jay Nolan in trouble. So for those people that want to know, like the FTC will give you this bullshit answer, well, you have to, you know, it depends on how many complaints, and there's got to be a lot of them. No, there doesn't. There has to be 27. They have to be focused on, again, unsophisticated guy, all the money in one place, an easy win. So they went after Jay Nolan knowing that they would be able to win because he's unsophisticated. They did not expect their distributors to wind up raising $1 million for legal fees, but they knew they were eventually going to win because they do everything they possibly can to suppress evidence, to make sure they get the judge to see things the way they want to do so they can get that easy win. Well, the Neora case has been, in my opinion, pushed back and delayed because they want to use the precedence of the Success by Health win because they need it after their loss from the Supreme Court. So basically now the judge is basically just sitting there with the paperwork on his desk saying, you know, well, I can't just jump on it right now. I got to let it sit there for a couple months, you know, make it look like I'm making some kind of a decision. So he's going to be using the precedent of the Success by Health win, quote unquote, by the FTC to hammer Neora so they get another win based on the precedence of Success by Health. So then they can go get more wins against more MLM companies. So the FTC is playing, in my opinion, the political game of, listen, you know, we know how to work this one out. We'll go nail a weak one. We'll use the weak one to go get another one that's somewhat weak, I'm sure, but we're going to be able to nail them. And when I say suppress evidence, a lot of you people that are listening in have no freaking clue how corrupt our legal system is. No clue on how corrupt our legal system is. When you're in the courtroom, what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say, what is suppressed, what is granted, what is fabricated, what is whatever, holy crap. If you think we have a good legal system, you are absolutely crazy. Now, it might be better than getting hung or maybe getting shot or maybe getting killed, but the reality is these guys are just friggin' corrupt, and the FTC is no better than any of the other ones. Trust me. I know firsthand. I've seen it many, many, many times. So what I think, Scott, is happening is Neora is just waiting for that judge to kind of be able to put all the Success by Health shit together so they could nail Neora and then just watch the dominoes as they fall. So I'll let you comment on that, but I'll just say one last thing. I am not 100% against the FTC. I would be a hypocrite if I didn't tell you that I have cashed, I think, in the last year, two checks from actions of the FTC that I didn't do anything with. Meaning, like one was a bank, another one was MoneyGram. So I got refund checks from actions I didn't ask for, but from fraud that was done by MoneyGram and fraud that was done by a bank. I don't remember, both of them were a few hundred dollars. But the reality is the FTC did that work for me, and I got a check and I was able to cash it. So I will never say the FTC does not do excellent work in some areas. But when they're bad or quote-unquote corrupt, they are really bad and really corrupt, and they overreach. So their FTC has done some really amazing stuff before, and they probably will do some really amazing things again. But in reference to, like, what they're doing with Elon Musk and Twitter, it's government overreach. What they're doing with Success by Health, definitely crooked. What they're going to be wound up doing with Neora, it's just a matter of time between how much they're going to slap Neora. And then who knows what's going to be used a little bit later on, and we're just watching that all happen. And unfortunately, you get an academic who is a power-hungry person like Lina Khan, who has been spanked by the Supreme Court, and now she's doing things that she's going to do, because she's got an agenda. She wants to make sure she stays, I'm sure, as the chairperson. She wants to make a career. She wants to make sure the Democrats stay in power, because I'm sure that if somebody came in, they can wipe her out, clean out that whole thing if they wanted to, and get somebody else in there as well. So because of the hunger for power and the aggressive stance of some of the people with the FTC, she's going to do whatever she possibly can to be able to retain that position and keep other people out of power. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, and that's another important factor for who wins the presidency coming up in 2024.
Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of influence there and other agencies too. It's not just the FTC, but a lot of other agencies. And I experienced that bias firsthand when Amway sued me too, Peter. You know, the judge at one point kind of stopped the hearing and never went to trial. We just had some hearings and a settlement. But during one of the hearings, he looks at me and says, "I think you're taking this too seriously." You know, and why would a judge make a stupid comment like that if he's not biased? It was insulting to me that he thought I was taking being scammed too seriously. So, yeah, I've seen it firsthand, and I believe that it happens very commonly. That he might have a garage full of SA-8, which is the Amway laundry detergent.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised, put it that way. Now, I think he's probably passed away by now, because he retired immediately within a very short time after my settlement with Amway. He was in poor health at the time. He was, you know, basically dragging himself around into the courtroom for these hearings. So I don't even know if he was of sound mind. You know, that's how far. Now, I'm very happy with the settlement, because it was pretty much a slam dunk for me. And by the way, the settlement is on my website. That's one of the things that I told Amway. I said, yeah, I'll do a settlement with you, but it has to be made public or else it's a no-go. Well, they agreed to that, because, you know, in most settlements, whether it's MLM or non-MLM, it's very common for both sides to say we settle and we have no further comment. And that's usually part of the settlement requirements, is you cannot say anything afterwards. That's very common, and I didn't want that. I wanted this thing to be in the public. I wanted the public to know that Amway sued me, and I beat them. I beat them in the settlement because the things that I am not allowed to do are extremely minor, but I can do things like this show and just state very clearly Amway is a scam. It's an illegal pyramid because of lack of retail sales, and it's a RICO fraud because of the tool scam. And they can't touch me. So that's pretty good. I think you can say I won by my ability to say that without any legal repercussions. So that's really interesting, Peter, that whole I'm going to have to definitely listen to that probably at 1.5 or 2x speed to get through it in a reasonable amount of time. But, yeah, that's real interesting stuff.
Yeah, and they spoke about non-competes. I guess the non-compete thing might be MLM-related, but it really wasn't. It's more for employees, but it does have ramifications for MLM as well. So they talked about how the FTC was trying to wipe out non-competes and a whole bunch of other things as well. So I probably missed some stuff as well. I was kind of like watching it with one eye as well as I was doing something else as well. So those are the ones that kind of caught my attention. There's probably more as well. So when you listen to it, we can come back and kind of talk about that a little bit further as well. But, you know, the reality is like for some people that are, I'm not going to say, they're just not knowledgeable because they just don't work with this wheelhouse. Like at the Success by Health trial, they couldn't mention the word Ponzi. And the reason why they couldn't mention the word Ponzi is, if they mention the word Ponzi, they would be able to introduce, meaning Success by Health would be able to introduce expert witnesses that would prove it wasn't a Ponzi. Same thing at the Zeke Rewards case. In the Zeke Rewards trial, they were not allowed to use the word Ponzi. But if you read all of the documentation, the allegations, blah, 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 even the stuff that people write about it afterwards, they all refer it as it was a Ponzi. But they were not allowed to use the word Ponzi at trial, both sides. The judge says you cannot use that word Ponzi scheme for Zeke Rewards. But yet, if you talk to anybody who doesn't know what they're talking about, you'd say, oh, they were found to be a Ponzi scheme. No, they weren't. They couldn't even use the word Ponzi in the trial. And there's documentation that actually there was an expert witness that said Zeke Rewards could never be and never was a Ponzi. So part of the reason why the prosecution didn't want the word Ponzi out there is because as soon as they said the word Ponzi, that would come in. And if you found the transcript from that judge said, I am not having some expert witness tell this jury that this wasn't a Ponzi. I am not allowing that to happen. Now, could you imagine that, Scott? You're on trial. If you're at Paul Burks, you're on trial for a Ponzi scheme, and the judge says, I'm not going to let that jury hear some expert witness say that you weren't a Ponzi. We're not going to allow that. So none of you guys will be able to use the word Ponzi in this whole entire trial. Isn't that crazy? And I'm like, holy cow, crazy. Same thing with Success by Health. So it's all rigged. Yep. It's all rigged, you know? So it's all rigged. So if I were Donald Trump, I'd be scared shitless because it's all rigged. You're going to jail, Donald. You better kick this thing out until you become elected president if you could figure that out and then pardon yourself. So I got to throw my Donald Trump thing in there as well because what they did to Donald Trump was really unfair. And what they're doing to Donald Trump is really unfair. Give the guy a chance. But anyway. Oh, and by the way, if you missed it, Scott, Glenn Beck did a review of the Summit, which is a religious organization, and they interviewed many of the Republican frontrunners for the presidency. Tucker Carlson actually did the interview. Glenn Beck did kind of like the editorial on that. You can find it on YouTube as well. But that was really good because you can see some of the frontrunners and some of the way they behaved themselves. So Donald Trump wasn't there, they said, because of a scheduling conflict. But it was really good. Anyway, so back to you, Scott. Sorry for the distraction.
No, that's good. I'll have to take a look at that too. We might have the first president because there's no prohibition of being president while you're in prison. So we might have, you know, Trump behind bars as a president. It can happen. So, well, you're right. I mean, it's been so unfair the whole time. You know, they completely made up the whole Russia thing. It's known now. It's known that it was completely made up. And yet you won't see any apologies. You won't see any people saying, yeah, we're sorry. You know, we were wrong. We jumped the gun. We believed, weak sources. We did bad journalism. Or you don't see any buddy in the FBI or CIA or all the other three-letter words in the federal government, you know, going to prison like they should for lying. There was only one guy that was punished. It was a lawyer who changed the document. You know, he basically changed a yes to a no, which is, you know, the complete opposite meaning, obviously. And all he did was slap him on the hand and say, yeah, don't do that again. And yet it wrecked the whole presidency of Trump, because even the Republicans didn't trust him for a good year and a half to 2 years because they thought that maybe this is true. You know, why would you want to be associated with a guy who ends up being, you know, favorable to the Russians, spying for the Russians and so forth? You know, it makes sense. But to just totally lie like that, it's so Amway tool scamish, I guess you could say.
Well, it's so corrupt. If they do go to trial, Donald Trump will go to jail because they'll corrupt the evidence. They'll corrupt the whole trial. They'll make sure the jury is such. And they have so many counts against him. All they need is one. All they need is one. And there's two more cases that they're going to bring up as well. So they're doing everything they possibly can to put him in jail. So it's very interesting. Yeah, we could talk about this forever. But for the only reason why I kind of point that out as well is you can see how corrupt our legal system is. So for those people, and don't think the FTC is any better. So all the stuff that we're watching is just, you know, I used to follow Ralph Nader, still do to a certain extent. We've had Jim Turner, who's an attorney for Citizens for Health. I've listened to him forever. I work with a lot of the MLM attorneys, as well as a whole bunch of other things, been involved actively and passively in these other trials. And the reality is this legal system is not a justice system. This legal system is corrupt when it wants to be. So having said that, Scott, back to you.
And this is why we want a smaller government, because a bigger government is just more abusive. You know, it's not that a smaller government is not abusive at all. It's just less abusive. So keep it small. Don't let it get giant. And it's getting giant, obviously. So, we need a change, and we need it really soon. So hopefully, you know, we can get Mr. Stumble Fumble out of the White House and get someone, you know, whether it's Trump or another Republican, whatever it turns out to be. Right now it looks like Trump. I mean, it looks, and I'm sure a lot of the other Republicans are running only because they think that he's going to be put in prison and then not elected, and that's the only reason they're running, really, because they know they can't beat him, you know, as far as if they went head-to-head with him. They're just hoping he's going to get into legal trouble, and then things will get real messy. So anyway, so do you want to talk about a couple of behind MLM stories?
Absolutely.
There's a couple on here that were very interesting. One of them is actually very recent, a couple days ago, July 13th, 2023, the headline. And by the way, we're reading from behindmlm.com, great website for finding and tracking not just MLMs, but all kinds of scams, you know, crypto, Ponzi, whatever. And we don't cover nearly all of them. We don't even come close. But a lot of them are very small. They're very young. They're gone before most people even are aware of them. And they're very repetitive, very similar to each other, especially the crypto ones. So we don't cover them all. Never try to. But there's one here that's interesting because we talked about this former company before, and the headline is, I don't know how you say it, Lavere, L-O-V-V-A-R-E, Lavere Review, Deceptive Black Oxygen Organics Reboot. So this is a company, Black Oxygen Organics, that we had covered before. It's basically some mud up in Canada that's supposed to have these magical properties. Now it's based out of Utah, of all places, you know, central point of MLMs, and I guess they're ramping up again. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I know a lot of anti-MLM huns took credit, and some of it might be warranted, for criticizing Black Oxygen Organics, because it was found that there was a lot of heavy metals in there, potentially very dangerous, and so some really bad publicity got around, and I don't know all the things that went in. I also think that the United States said you can't bring that product in the United States, and even the Canadian government cracked down on it, you know, from a product danger point of view. So we'll see what happens, but it does look interesting to see what's going to happen with this this reboot of that company. Anything else on that one?
Nope.
So another one that we have covered before, there's an update here. It's, again, July 13th, 2023 is the date. And the headline is, Blessings in No Time, Scammers Settle with FTC. So this company's called Bint, B-I-N-T, Blessings in No Time, and it's a gifting scheme. It's a pure play illegal pyramid. Instead of the old airplane game or chain letter, these gifting schemes, it's the same concept, is just done a little bit differently. It's where, hey, if you give me $1,000, and then if you can find four people to give you $1,000, and for each four of those people, if you can find four people for each of them to give them $1,000, then you can cash out at $20,000 or whatever the amount is. That's how all of these non-product illegal pyramids operate. Well, they were prosecuted by both the federal and Arkansas, and one of the interesting things that I found in this story, it said as part of their promotion efforts, the Moores, that's the couple that got shut down, claimed IRS, FBI agents, and Pentagon officials were participating BINT members. So I don't know if we'll ever find out who those people were. That could be part of the settlement that they're not allowed to talk about it, which is unfortunate. And we don't know what the settlement is yet. It's still in front of the FTC to make a decision whether or not they're going to accept the settlement agreement or not. They probably will. That's normally how these things go. But they were supposed to go to trial in October, and now obviously that's been put on hold until the FTC either accepts or declines this settlement that they have in place that has not been approved yet. That's just a good update on that particular one. Did you have any other comments?
Nope. No, just a one side note. Some people always ask whether gifting is legal or not. Jeffrey Babner still has – Jeffrey Babner is an MLM attorney who passed away a couple of years ago, but his family or whatever still has the videos that he made up on YouTube. So if you look for Jeffrey Babner, he was the guy who beat the hell out of William Keep, you know, Professor Keep over at the College of New Jersey, the marketing, quote-unquote, professor at that TravelMax facility. I always got to bring that one up. But Jeffrey Babner did a really good video on gifting. So if you do a YouTube search, Jeffrey Babner gifting, or find his YouTube channel, you'll be able to see it there and get a lawyer's opinion of gifting. So it hasn't changed, even though, you know, many years old, but it hasn't changed. So this, the Blessings company, or the Blessings activity, they might call it, was destined to fail from the very beginning.
Yeah, those operations are clearly illegal. Those are basically product-less pyramid schemes, whereas MLMs, when they lack retail sales, they are also pyramid schemes, because if you think about it, most MLM products are overpriced. So the first part of that purchase of a product that's overpriced is a legitimate purchase, a legitimate sale. But on top of that, that's just like a gifting scheme. And if you don't have free market demand, i.e. customers that say, yes, that product is worth that much, I'm not getting anything for it except for the product in exchange for my money, that's how you prove the value of something. You know, it's an old saying of, well, how much is something worth? It's worth what someone's willing to pay for it. And that's the right answer. Now, that doesn't mean a distributor. That means a customer. When we say whatever they're willing to pay for it, because like the judge in the Burn Lounge decision said, you know, distributors have a conjoined or a combined opportunity. One is the same thing that a customer has, you know, is that thing worth that much money? But the second opportunity or incentive, you might say, excuse me, the distributor has, is they're being told by their upline, you know, my one-line description of the MLM spiel, if you work hard enough and long enough, you'll get filthy rich. And so in a distributor's mind, it is worth overpaying for a product, because that's how you get to be successful in MLM, is by basically copying your upline, because they tell you that. Your upline tells you, you got to do what I did to get to where I am. And so I bought these products, I bought these tools, that's what you have to do to get where I am. Now, what they're really saying is you have to buy these overpriced products. You have to buy these tools that there's secret and massive profit from, only for the top layer of people, of course. But that's the line, and that's why you have to have retail sales to have a legitimate MLM instead of an illegal pyramid. And that's what a lot of MLM huns, or I should say, well, actually MLM and non-MLM huns do not understand. They never heard it before, or they don't understand it. They're just not smart enough, I guess, to process those thoughts into a cogent, approach to the issue. And so here we are with social media gone crazy. So there's another story here, which is kind of a OneCoin update, so to speak. It's July 8th, 2023 is the date on the story. And the headline is Ruja Ignatova's, I'm going to mispronounce this word too, Ruja Ignatova's Sozopol mansion is now a rentable lodge.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So apparently the founder of OneCoin, who's been missing since 2017, we don't know if she's hiding somewhere like in Dubai or Russia, or maybe she's wearing some cement boots at the bottom of some lake or ocean. We don't have any idea. They did increase the reward for her. I can't remember the number, but it was pretty substantial. You know, it's enough to get somebody who needs some money to say, yeah, I kind of know where she is. I need that money. That's, you know, with why they always offer these, you know, fantastic rewards. I think it's somewhere in the order of $100,000 to $500,000, something like that, or maybe it's in the millions. I don't recall, but it was a good sum of money that's being offered for someone who can turn her in. But that's the latest from OneCoin, I guess, sort of, because no one really knows who owns this thing, this mansion, and it's very fuzzy, and the whole, I think this is in Bulgaria, and the whole government, if you think ours is corrupt, go to Bulgaria. You're talking massive corruption, so it's impossible. Anything more on Ruja?
No, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with her eventually. Nobody really knows.
Yeah, we may never know. I mean, if she is, you know, wearing cement boots in the bottom of some lake or ocean, nobody may ever know what happens, or at least not in our lifetimes.
The one thing, too, if you remember, she also had a baby. Like, that whole, like, no one is talking about that. Like, she had a mom, she had a baby, and nobody's ever brought up, you know, anything about the baby, because if the mom is gone, where did the baby go? Meaning, not the mom, meaning, like, if Dr. Ruja, you know, Ignatova, the one who got pregnant and had a baby, it's not like they just chop her up and throw her in the ocean. What do they do with a baby? You know, nobody's ever spoken about that I know of.
Yeah, I don't think they have. No one's really talked about the baby, what happened to the baby.
Nope.
We don't know. It's a total mystery. Now, I wouldn't put it past some of these characters, you know, these mafia types in Russia or Bulgaria or wherever, that they're both wearing cement boots.
Right.
I wouldn't doubt that one second. So, but we don't know. We have no idea. No idea at all. So there's another story here that kind of interesting. July 7th, 2023, Generation Zoe, metaverse architect arrested in Argentina. So I know we've talked about this Generation Zoe before, and apparently this is one of their main kingpins of that company. Now he's been arrested in Argentina. I don't know what the plans are going forward, if they're going to extradite him somewhere or try him in Argentina. Have no idea. But it's always good, I think, to point out when these people that have been chased around for a while are found and arrested, and, you know, we talk about stories of their, you know, penalties, whether it be prison or money, being prohibited from getting involved in MLMs again. I like to point it out, because it's not very many of these stories. There needs to be a lot more, in my opinion. Again, based on lack of retail sales and illegal pyramids, that's the big thing that is almost universal across MLMs, and that really should be where the FTC should focus to really get a hold of this thing, because it is out of control. It really is. Let's see. There was one more in here, Peter. I know I saw the other day that I wanted to bring up, and I'm trying to find it right now. I'm trying to even remember what it was, but it was another story that I wanted to bring up just because it was good, and I think it was a company we've talked about before, but I'm not finding it right now. Let me see.
Yeah, most of them here are just like cryptocurrency scams. All those types of trading types of issues, you know, the run-of-the-mill kind of ones that are just, you know, ones that people should probably take a look at and run away from the very beginning.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to spend time on this website because you can look up a company name or a person's name, because a lot of these people, you know, go from one to another. They'll go from one, get some money out of it, and then when it starts, like the government might be on their tail, they jump to another one and just kind of, you know, go from company to company. And some of them even get offered big money to jump to another MLM. And so they entice them to go to a brand new one. And it kind of makes sense, again, from a business perspective. You know, if you're a brand new MLM, if you don't have any distributors, how are you going to make money? So what you do is you entice somebody from another MLM, or even more than one person from another MLM, to come over, bring a group over, and all of a sudden you've got some built-in volume. And that's, you know, to me, that's a decent strategy. A lot of people criticize that, but, you know, that's business. It does make them look a little, you know, not quite what you would call honest, because they say, well, this is the best MLM ever, and all of a sudden they jump to another one. So I guess they just find a better one, you know. But anyway, yeah, I'm coming up empty on – I thought there was one more I wanted to talk about, Peter. But we can end it here if you have something else you want to talk about.
No,
we are at the end of our time here.
Yeah, we're already over. So, yeah, good stuff. So for those people listening in, we do this radio show every Saturday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central Side. And, Scott, why don't you give me your website one more time?
Yeah, facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson. ScottTexJohnson, all one word. And Peter, another good show, and we'll see you next Saturday.
Thank you. We're going to catch everyone next week. Thanks, Edward. Thanks, Scott.
Yep, take care. Bye.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.